Welcome into the best in paranormal programming. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Tim Dennis. Every Thursday, I leave you with what you may call a tagline, but really is from the heart. And I say, go out there and be a light in someone's darkness. Today, we have a literal light in the spiritual darkness with us. My guest today has written a series of books called Afterlife Interrupted. I read the first book before I had him on today, and it touched me deeply. I want to talk with him today about his entire series, about his podcasts, which are called The Joyful Friar, and a little bit about what he does, because I grew up Catholic, so what he does is unusual to me, especially in his station in the Catholic Church. Let me tell you a little bit about him. Nathan G. Castle has been a Catholic priest of the semi-contemplative Dominican order since 1979. Father Nathan has served as a campus minister at Arizona State University, the University of California, Riverside, and Stanford University. Currently, he lives in a community of Dominican men and women serving the University of Arizona in Tucson. Father Nathan has prayed for deceased souls since childhood and has helped stuck souls cross over for almost 20 years. He has used the first book and Toto 2, The Wizard of Oz, as a spiritual adventure as the basis for healing of trauma retreats for spiritual groups and survivors of natural disasters. He's also available for speaking engagements and retreats. Father Nathan also can be contacted through his website, which we have in the link for the description of this program. Father Nathan also remarkably has done over 250 of these contacts with these stuck souls and help them to cross over to the other side. Now, before I bring him in the past, the only way I shouldn't say the only way, but one of the ways we've been told through Marianne Winkowski, who was the inspiration of the Ghost Whisperer program on CBS, was to find that light, that spiritual light from the other side, and it could be found at different places, and to find that light and to cross over to it. And maybe even through paranormal investigations, we've been told to tell spirits to go to that light. I'm pleased as punch and proud to bring in Father Nathan Castle today to Darkness Radio to explain to us that there's a different way now to bring those souls to the light. Father Castle, thank you so much for joining us today on Darkness Radio.
I'm happy to be here. If you would, call me Father Nathan. That's
okay.
What I'm most comfortable with.
Father Nathan, we'll do that. Thank you so much, Father Nathan, for being here.
Okay.
Let me start out first of all. Let's get to know you a little bit, and then let's move forward towards this amazing gift that you've been given to help. Tell us a little bit about yourself, your upbringing, and how you got your beginnings.
Well, for anybody that's viewing this podcast, I have my Dallas Cowboy hat on because you started it. You're wearing a Vikings hoodie, it looks like.
Yeah, we figured we
did. Just for a little fun. I grew up in Texas, much closer to Houston, but I grew up, Dallas got football teams the same year in both leagues, the AFL and the NFL. And the Cowboys were in the bigger league and were on TV all the time. And the Oilers, the Houston Oilers came in, but they were never on TV. So I became a Dallas Cowboy fan and a Houston Colt 45s and Houston Astro fan. So sports is a big deal in my life. And as a campus minister, especially at Stanford, I got to be the chaplain to the team.
Oh, really?
During the years that we went to the Rose Bowl and the Orange Bowl. And I got to fly on the team charter and, you know, say mass at Notre Dame for the team and all that. So sports is a large part of my life. I play golf, but I don't play anything else well, but I can cheer for my teams at least.
Well, if I can confess, Father Nathan, as a kid, now I was a kid of the 70s and 80s, even though I was a huge Minnesota Vikings fan and I live and die by them, I was also a huge fan of Earl Campbell and Tony Dorsett, and I do have autographed jerseys from both of them.
Do you really? Good for you.
I do. So the I do have part of my heart does lie with those two. So
I not only follow the liturgical seasons of the Catholic Christian calendar, but the sports season of what, and October is a huge time because, you know, you've got the baseball playoffs and it won't be long before the NBA and the NHL kick in and college football and all that. So that's a large part of what I'm thinking about when I'm not doing churchy things.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think, you got to have a healthy love of life in general, right?
It came naturally. I came from a large family in Southeast Texas, and sports were a big deal, especially for my mom. That's just been a joy for me, especially the baseball season, because it's so long. There are 162 games a year, and you can almost always have a game while that season's going. Unfortunately, my team didn't make the playoffs, but we'll be back next year.
There you go. There you go. The one thing I noticed from reading your book is that, as you mentioned, family is a huge thing for you, and elders as mentors seem to me, it seems like that was a huge part of your upbringing as well. You talk about the elders in your family being quite instrumental in your upbringing. Tell me a little bit about how your family molded you.
Yeah, I was born in 1956. So my grandparents, my dad's parents, lived next door. My dad had only two siblings, and they both became nuns in the same order that I now belong to, Dominican. They were first grade teachers. My parents were both very active in their Catholic faith, and not just in the rules and regulations, but especially my mother was good at teaching spiritual practice. And for example, I knew from very early on that I had a life on earth and a life in heaven, that I would be here for a certain amount of years, and after this life on earth, I would go home to heaven. We talked to our earth family all day long and did stuff with my siblings and at school and all of that. And then right before bedtime, she would say, "Get your pajamas on and brush your teeth, and I'll be in a minute." And she would, when I was just tiny, I would repeat prayers after her. But we were talking to our heaven family at night.
Huh.
And so I understood that I was this hybrid being that lived on two planes, and that was just the way that it is. And so was everybody else.
Yeah.
I mean, I wasn't unique in that regard. That's just the way life operates. And then as I, went to Catholic school and learned about the sacraments and the Catholic understanding of God and Trinity and communion, that everything is one, uni, and Catholic means universal. It means the oneness of all things. And so even though life gives us plenty of ways of looking at somebody else and thinking of them as strange or distant or other, I understood really early on that that's really not true. That other person over there might be the other kind, whatever that means, but I'm also a part of them and they're a part of me and there's only oneness. So I understood that as a really little kid. And so that pertained also to whether a person was alive on earth or whether they died already.
Wow. All right.
Dead people don't stay dead.
Right. Yeah.
Death is a moment that people go through. And then once they're finished with it, they're alive in a different way. And yes, in a different place, but then also not completely so, because God is everywhere. And if you live in the inside of God, so does everybody else. And so you don't need to think of faraway lands, or you don't need to pray towards some galaxy or think of people who have died as being far, far away necessarily. They can also be nearby if you invite them to be. But anyway, that was native to me. It wasn't something that came along later. It was just something that grew from an early start and then matured in unusual ways later on.
That seems really, forgive me for saying this, Father Nathan, but having been raised, I guess, in my Roman Catholic version of the church, that seems like light years away from where I was and what I learned and where they brought me in. I that seems really enlightened, and I wish I would have been raised that way, to be honest with you.
Well, if I can help you, I will. We could do a remedial course. I'm just glad that I had the upbringing that I did. It wasn't like our family was ideal and didn't have quarrels and troubles and all of that. But I'm almost 70 now, and I look back on all of that and think I was given such a good foundation about really fundamental things early on, especially that I'm loved. And not just because I'm such a nice guy and I'm so lovable. It's like I arrived from the one who is love, the love that created the whole universe. I'm part of the one love. And even on days when, or moments in my life when I felt lonely and had that nobody loves me temptation, I can chase it away. I know that's just not true. And everybody else is as loved as I am. And that doesn't take away from me or them. We're all just loved. And the work that I end up doing that we'll talk about in this podcast is just an extension of that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, if I can just be blunt about it, I absolutely fell in love with that first book when I sat down to read that first book. It really hit home and really hit the heart. And
well, you know, I'm a podcaster too. Tell me a story that you found in that book that you really liked.
I don't want to get the man's name wrong, but it was the man that you called Colonel Sanders, the lawyer who,
oh yeah, Shelby.
Shelby. Yes. I knew it was an S name.
He's in my heart. Yeah.
There's also the young man who's gay, who ends up dying, and he's actually
no, Dwight.
Dwight. Dwight. Yes. Dwight. Yep. I'm sorry. I'm bad with names.
That's all right.
But Dwight, who's actually helped crossed over by Dwight D. Eisenhower, and he has regular visits with Dwight D. Eisenhower and Jesus.
Yes.
I thought was
and
amazing.
He showed up later. That was only in book one. There are two more books. And Dwight circled back around. This happens sometimes where somebody that's been through the process that we do ends up being a helper later on for somebody else.
That's amazing. I mean, I mean, both beautiful stories. And again, worth the price of admission just for those two stories. But there are, again, amazing stories all throughout the book. So, yeah. And again, we'll talk more about your gifts here in just a second. What I want to get to is the one question I want to ask before we start to get into those gifts is the first. There's a part in the book where you talk about as you're working with, I believe it's your grandmother. Your grandmother takes you out, and you mentioned that she build. Was she the builder? Was she the one who was making plans? And at the same time that she's building things, she's citing different biblical things. Like as she's building something, she's citing different saints and whatnot.
She walked around with Saint Anthony of Padua. And Joseph the carpenter, Joseph the foster father of Jesus, and if you hung around her, she was next door. If you went over to her house, you were always walking around with the saints. It's just she talked about them frequently, and she explained how she was doing things that she didn't really know how to do because she would ask for the help that she needed to do them. She used an image that my younger sister was telling me about that she said, there's this big library in heaven and all you have to do is ask for the right book and they give it to you and then you know things. And that was the way she described it to a child. But she also sent off her books. Long before there was an internet in the early 60s, she would write away for Time Life magazine, how to do it books. So how to rewire your house, how to build a bathroom in your garage, and she would just buy these how to do it things. Now we'd probably go on YouTube and see a video of how to do stuff. She would just get these mail order books that would explain step by step how to rewire your house or how to replumb, and she how to create a compost heap. And she made these elaborate gardens. Some of them were fruit and vegetable, and others of them were exotic plants that weren't supposed to grow there. And how to splice plants together to make one thing, graft one thing onto another to make a third thing. Anyway, she was an artist. She would say, "Sweet Jesus, take my hand and let's go." And she would oil paint. And so she just did all kind of stuff. And I just watched her. And she said the reason she could do it is because she asked for the right helpers.
I find that fascinating. I really do. The fact that it's almost like she allowed those saints and those holy people to just channel through her, right? I mean, is that...
Yes, and that presumed presence and not distance, because a lot of people, when they think of prayer of any kind, they presume distance before they begin. They're talking toward God, or in our case, one of the saints, and presume distance. The man upstairs, on the other side of the divide or something like that. So you start with a distance metaphor. If you do it the other way around, if you start with a presence sense. It's way easier. Way easier.
So if
No
we
one wants to really be in a long distance relationship if they can have the up close one.
So we've been praying all wrong then?
It depends on how you pray. I've only met you for 20 minutes ago,
Well,
but
I think that's how we're, at least I think that's how I was taught to pray, right? God is here. Jesus is over here. And the saints are over here, and they're bigger than we. So of course it's a long distance relationship, isn't it?
well, I was taught that. I was taught both at the same time. And then as a child, I was having to square the circle. Well, what do you mean? It wasn't just about distance. What do you mean that God loves everybody and has built a fiery pit to throw his enemies in? And oh, by the way, Jesus on the cross says, Father, forgive them all. They don't know what they're doing. So there were contradictory messages that were coming at me even as a little child. And I just understood it's up to me to figure it out. It's up to me to make sense of how I'm going to live my life. And so some things you take in and say, okay, I understand that's part of the tradition, but I don't have to do that. I don't want to invest in that very much. Well, anyway, even the sky, our Father who art in heaven, heaven can sound like a faraway place where people go after they die if they're good,
Right.
right? Except in Spanish, this word is cielo. I live near the border, the Mexican border, and there's a lot of Spanish speaking around here. Cielo is the common word in Spanish for two things, sky and heaven. And in English, we can use the word heaven to say the heavens are glorious today if it's sunny out. It's sort of Elizabethan or, a pretentious sounding. We don't normally speak that way,
Yeah.
poetic maybe. But in Spanish, it's just commonplace. You have to learn from context. Which cielo are you talking about? The place where birds fly or the place where angels fly? And so Spanish speakers don't make that distinction. They just say, Padre nuestro, que estás en el cielo. And then I'll sometimes use with adults, I do a lot of retreat work, and I'll put out crayons and paper and Play-Doh. I try to bring out the young creative in them and say, would you draw me a picture of a house and a tree? And the sun and a cloud. And they'll all pretty much do the standard thing that we did in kindergarten or first grade. And you draw a horizon line and a house on top of the horizon line and the tree. And well, then I'll say, where's the sky? And well, it's at the top, but how far down does it come? Well, it comes all the way to the ground. You and I are breathing the sky. It's a good thing that the sky comes all the way to the ground because that's where our nostrils and our lungs are.
Right. Yeah.
We breathe in the sky. And for much of the church's life, for two, three quarters of the church's life, the Catholic Church, Christian churches, we thought we were standing on top of a table. We didn't understand that we were on a ball. And so for a long time, Christian prayer pointed up at the sky because that seemed to be where the power is. And once we understood that we were on a ball, what if we could get everybody in the world to point at the sky at the same time? What would that look like from off the earth? Like a blowfish or a pincushion or something like that. Everybody's pointing in every direction because the sky is all around us. And in fact, when you look at a starry sky at night, you're looking at a field of stars that look like it's above you, but it's also below you too. It's just that the earth itself is blocking your view. You can't see the stars that are under your feet. They're not all above you. They're around you. So if you understand that God is everywhere and you're somewhere, then you've got to be inside God.
Very true. Very true
All right.
indeed.
So I'll
Yeah.
ask people on a retreat, has anyone in this room ever lived inside anyone else? Wait for it.
Yeah.
Everybody in here has lived inside someone else. We're just doing it again. We're inside the Creator. And so, if you can start there, then all this distance of different kinds of people, races and ethnicities, and wealth and poverty and gender, and all the things that we fight about in our politics, it's all nonsense. It's called a universe for a reason because oneness is endemic to it. Oneness is built in, and all those other things that have they have some claim on us, but that we don't need to build entire identities and go to war over all these things. It's just not necessary.
It's very true. Yeah. And it's, this life is so short that we fight about such ridiculous things, you know.
And there'll come a day when we'll see the fullness of things. If we don't see it short of the grave, we'll see it after. And I've dealt with lots of people that died and didn't believe in an afterlife until they were in it. And then they had adapted and said, oh, well, I guess there is an afterlife after all. And then they need to learn its ways the way that we did when we got here. You know, it took us a while. You might have put your foot in your mouth and, you know, or run into the street or do all kind of things. You know, you had to learn how to balance yourself and how to speak and all kind of things. But the people that I deal with in this afterlife work, they're all people that went through trauma. They come in a dream. We didn't really establish that part of the process, but about once a week, I'll have a contact dream for somebody who has died. Either their trauma was at the time of their death, they died in a car crash or a shooting or something, or they had a trauma earlier in their life that they never fully dealt with.
Okay.
Lots of times people will have, you know, they're raped and they didn't want anybody to know about it. And so they try to just bury it and pretend it never happened or whatever. And then they get to the afterlife and find out that, oh, apparently it's important that I talk about this. different things like that. Sometimes people get heartbroken or addicted or whatever, and they just don't have the stamina or the wherewithal on this earth to confront it or deal with it. And they do it later. Anyway, go ahead.
Oh, let me ask you this, Father Nathan, before we go to break, and then we'll get a more detailed description of what it is you do and how you go about it. The first time that you had one of these dreams and realized that you were talking to someone on the other side and that it was your duty to step in and help, when was the first time you had contact with someone on the other side and realized it wasn't just a dream?
I was about 42, and even the other side presumes distance.
Okay, I'm sorry. I won't use that term after this.
Well, all right. Well, they were in my bedroom, in my head. That's pretty proximate.
Okay.
They were in my dream, and they were invited there because before I go to sleep, I consecrate my sleep before I go to sleep. It's a monastic practice that is part of my religious life. And we do that every night before we go to sleep. This particular dream was Ray, the gentleman that you read about in book one. It was a picture of a man, or in my head, I was watching that dream started with my own dreamscape. I was finishing a round of golf with a friend and we went into the bar and there was a silent auction going on for a charity. I've been at those all my life. And I looked up across the room and saw this ghastly piece of art on the wall. And I pointed it out to my friend and said, look at that nasty thing over there. Who would donate that to a charity? But it was so compelling, like the way that we want to crane and stop and look at a crash on the highway. You know, you know it's going to be ugly, but you can't look away. Mm-hmm. And I walked over toward it. And it was before we had televisions on walls, but it was as though it was that. It was a framed piece of art and it moved toward me and I moved toward it and then everything in it started to move. And it was depicting a young man burning to death on the engine of an old car from the late 50s, the kind with fins and chrome. And he was screaming, dying in pain and angry at someone or something at the same time. And I woke up. And as soon as I did, I just thought, that was not my dream. The first part about round of golf was, but not that ghastly part at the end. I sat up. I used to have to carry a pager. And if it was my turn to be on call for the hospital, in a city, the Catholic priests divide up who's going to do a emergency call in the night if there is one, and you have to have the pager that night. So I was used to being awakened once in a while because somebody was in a trauma. And that's what it felt like. It's just without the pager. It was in my dream. But I woke up and I wrote it down and I said a prayer to the guy and I introduced myself and said, I don't know how you found me or what's going on, but you clearly need some help. And in the morning, we'll figure out how to help you. right now I'm going to go back to sleep, but don't go away. I'll be back later.
Wow. And of course, for the rest of the story, I'm going to leave people on a cliffhanger there, Father Nathan. And for the rest of the story, I want you to go get the link. We have a link in the description of this program for the Afterlife Interrupted book, for all three books, as a matter of fact. And I want you to go to the first Afterlife Interrupted book where the story of Ray is there. And you can get the rest of the story of what happened with Ray and how Father Nathan and his prayer partner went and helped Ray. So I tell you what, Father Nathan, we're going to take a break here. When we come back, we're going to talk about this gift of yours and how you work with different prayer partners to help these people who are stuck get unstuck. And we'll discuss how it is that people get stuck. You've already mentioned trauma and why they get stuck. You've mentioned trauma, but how sometimes we can cause our own trauma or how we can force ourselves to get stuck.
Yes.
And what we should do if we get stuck. So we'll
There's a phrase for that. It's called, "That's my story and I'm sticking to it." We'll go into that after the break.
That's right. We'll go into that after the break. My guest is Father Nathan G. Castle, OP. The Afterlife Interrupted books are available right now, and the third one is especially available right now, Afterlife Interrupted, Helping Stuck Souls Cross Over. Again, links to all three books in the description of this program. The Joyful Friar, which is Father Nathan's podcast. We have a link to that in the description as well. I want you to check that out as well. Great podcast. So when we get back, that phrase that Father Nathan just said, we'll get into that when we come back right here on the Best in Paranormal Podcasting. This is Darkness Radio.
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at MinkyCouture.com. This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at MinkyCouture.com. This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at MinkyCouture.com.
Welcome back to the Best in Paranormal Podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Tim Dennis. My guest is Father Nathan G. Castle, OP. He is the author of the Afterlife Interrupted book series. The third book available right now is Afterlife Interrupted, Helping Stuck Souls Cross Over. We have a link to all three books in the description of this program. Also want you to check out the Joyful Friar podcast. We have a link to that as well in the description of this program. All right, again, memory's not what it used to be, Father Nathan, but you used a phrase there at the end of the break. We were talking about stuck souls getting unstuck. You said there was a phrase for that.
That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
All right.
When you hear people say that, or perhaps you've said it yourself, but when you hear people say that, there's an underlying presumption that the story isn't completely truthful. But that's my story and I'm sticking to it. And so we can lie to ourselves And families do it. We create family lore that picks and chooses things and skips over other things. We can do it to ourselves. A lot of low self-esteem stuff is believing negative messaging about us, some of which happened all the way back to the cradle, the sandbox, kindergarten, whatever. We can begin to learn that we're not good enough, we're not fast enough, there's not as many stars next to our name. There's a lot of classroom things that cause children to rate themselves against others. And a lot of that stuff follows people through their life. And sometimes they believe about themselves that they're not enough. My first book is on The Wizard of Oz. That one is called Antodo II, The Wizard of Oz is a Spiritual Adventure. And the characters, the central characters in that story, especially the three that Dorothy meets along the way, all believe the same lie, that I lack something essential. And they sing that song, If I Only Had a Brain, if I Only Had a Heart, If I Only Had the Nerve, that there would be a different version of me that I can't get to because I don't have what I need. And in that story, you see at the beginning, as you meet each character, they really do. They just don't know it. The viewer knows that they have a brain and that they have a heart and that they have some, at least a little bit of courage. But that you have to watch it grow in them. And they need time and experience of that populates the scenes, the future scenes in the movie. So it's like that. People sometimes just get thwarted and believe things about themselves that aren't true. And then other times they can be tempted into feeling that because I'm not good enough, I better make sure that there's at least somebody worse than me. They're me. I don't want to be the absolute bottom rung of the ladder. There's got to be somebody I can scapegoat. There's got to be some kind of person who I can look down on so that I'm not utterly on the bottom. And all of that is just so laborious and so sad. And so unnecessary, because we're all beloved, and we can all shed those untrue things. And if I believe if we don't do it in this life, there'll be the next opportunity to get to the truth that you really were good all along. You just didn't. You just let something else creep in and have too much power.
My mom always had a saying, and I used to roll my eyes, but the older I get, the more I listen to it, and that's do your best and forget the rest. In other words, do your best job and put your blinders on and don't worry about the others, right?
That's a good wise saying, and you remember it. However old you are now, you're still saying it.
Yeah, the idea being that, the only race you really run is the one against yourself. The others don't matter, and you shouldn't be holding yourself to other standards.
No, and it goes on and on. I'm on my current podcast. I'm dealing with a story that's in book three of a really brilliant young woman who was she turned down Stanford. That's what I worked at Stanford for 7 years, and in the dream, she made sure that I knew that she turned down Stanford,
Really?
and she went to some other elite school, but she got caught up in academic cheating.
Oh, no.
She nearly had a PhD in some lab-related science field. And I learned this from working with PhD candidates that they have to create a really clever study that they can do. And if they are going to posit, like if they're going to cure Alzheimer's, they have to figure out is there something environmental or something in the diet or something like that. And then they have to create a study to see over time whether they can prove it. And sometimes the thesis is disproven. That's the way it works. It's a toss-up. Is this or is this not causal to this other effect? And you do all the, you put your study together and you run the study and you come to your conclusion and you hope that you're going to get a positive conclusion because that's way more fun than getting a negative one. And then she explained that if you get a negative conclusion, you still added to the body of knowledge, but it's harder to get funding for the next study. If you can prove causality, it's way easier to get funding for the next thing. And she worked her way to the end of the project and almost had her PhD, but her thesis was disproven. But she lied about it. And she got caught. And she killed herself.
Oh no. Oh.
And so she came in a dream and showed me some symbology about being on a college campus, but being outside the building and listening to people talking inside about deceit and fraud. And then somebody came toward her with two lit candles, and I woke up. And it turned out, you know how university crests and shields often have symbols of light in them?
Yeah.
Flames or the sun or something, because light and enlightening, bringing enlightenment to the world. Your show is about darkness and light. Universities often have in their founding statements something about enlightenment. And she was dealing in the afterlife with the fact that she had added darkness to the search for truth. And in the afterlife, she was owning up to that and charting a new course, recognizing that one of my friends in book two, her husband and child were killed in a car crash, and she was left alone. And she later in the afterlife said, we asked her, is there anything that you'd like to say, like from beyond the grave? Is there advice that you'd like to give to anybody that hears your story? And she said, I absolutely do. She said, don't let the worst thing that happened define you.
Wow.
Because that's what she did. She put it in a sentence like your mother did.
Yeah.
She was able to say, don't let the worst thing that happens to you define you, because that's what I did. And I made myself miserable. I mean, everybody could understand that, okay, you lost your husband and your only child in Iraq, but she made that her identity for the rest of her life and shut down. And then when she got into the afterlife, she sort of was hoping that it would all be magically reversed, that she would, you know, walk into some wonderland where all is well. And she was told, well, it can be, but you still have to take part. And you atrophied, you gave up, and we'll help you get up and moving again, but you have to take part. And she eventually, that story was really sweet. She you know those old motel signs from the old roads from the 50s before the interstates were built?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You think of the town you've ever been through that had a bunch of mom and pop motels?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them had neon signs that moved.
Yep.
Out here in the West, it might have been the Buckaroo Inn, and there'd be a horse, and it would buck up, and the rider would go this way, and he'd take his hat off and swirl it in the air and come back down and repeat it all over again.
Yep.
She said, it's like one of those neon signs. She was looking across at where she was about to go, and she said, it's my husband. But he died when he was in his 20s. He looks like a really handsome middle-aged man. And my daughter was only 2, and now she's 18. And they're both looking at me and smiling, and I know it's them, but then they're turning back into what they were the day they died. It's like they did before they left the house on that errand that took their life. They died in a car crash. And she said they walked out the door and never came back. And she said, they're showing me like this motel sign where they're this, and then they become that. And then they go back and forth, and they're saying to me that we're both of these things. We can be the way that you saw us that last day, but we've already lived that, and we don't want to really do that again. We'd rather you meet us where we are, but we'll meet you halfway. If you want to go back and relive some of the moments that we missed, we can do that, but we really rather you hurry up, catch up to us, because we really just want to be with you and not have to be in some in-between.
Now, I think I read something like this in the first book, Father Nathan. And are you saying that if a soul passes away young, and I think, was it Ronnie that did this in the first book? Where
she's the one who died in the tsunami, that great big tsunami, yep, in the Indian Ocean.
And she died at the age of 12. Can she age? I said I wouldn't use the term. Can she age in heaven? Can she then go forward from the age of 12 and start to progress in age on the other side?
Her issue, she was in Sri Lanka, which used to be called Ceylon, this island nation at the tip of India, mm-hmm, southern tip. And she and her family were on vacation, she called it holiday. On a Sunday morning, her parents were in their hotel suite and they were sleeping in, and she couldn't stand it. The beach was right there. All she wanted to do was go down to the beach. And she disobeyed at 12 years old and went to the beach in time for a tsunami to sweep her out to sea. And she died that way. So she died being disobedient, and she was her parents' only child. And so she also had that kind of honoring of parents that's more prominent in Oriental cultures than it is in a lot of Western cultures. I lived at Stanford with lots of Chinese and Singaporean and other Asian young people. It's different. And so she was really, really guilty in her own conscience of breaking the rules, disobeying, and in her imagination, ruining the rest of her parents' life because they no longer have any children. They will never have grandchildren. Her disobedience caused that. And so she was in the afterlife, all wound up like that. And not only the fact that she had died in this cataclysmic event, but that she in her mind created this scenario that she's ruined the lives of her parents. And so she had to calm down about that. She had to be reminded of basic facts. Well, indeed, what you did was you were a 12-year-old who disobeyed a parental rule and who was tragically in a colossal accident. That's the truth of the matter. The rest of it is speculation that you're adding on top of it. And that's not, in the courtroom, you tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. And anyone old enough to remember Dragnet, when I was a little child on TV, it was just the facts, ma'am, just the facts. Don't tell us a bunch of other stuff. Tell us the facts. And that's what happens in a courtroom. You don't get to get up on the stand and muse about what you think the meaning of things are. You just say what happened and let the judge and jury decide what the truth is. So sometimes people will create stories before they leave here, or in the course of leaving here, that get them tangled up. And that just needs to be disentangled to get back to truth before they can move on to be happier and more whole.
Now, as Ronnie's on the other side, and as she's living her existence, I said the term. I know I wasn't supposed to, but
But I just call it the afterlife.
The afterlife. All right, we'll use the afterlife. As she's there in the afterlife and living her existence there, and you've already mentioned now that there's this woman who has seen her husband and child there, and they seem to have, as that bucking bronco is there, and the cowboy and the bucking bronco, that they aged forward and then went back, and she had the choice of seeing them one way or another.
Yes.
Does Ronnie advance in age? Does
She did. She was Her issue was she was only 12 years of age, but I think her both of her parents were university educated, and they poured all these educational resources into their only child, and so she was a precocious 12-year-old. She didn't like being around children her age because she said, "I'm not interested in toys and childish things." She thought of herself as about 20, but in a 12-year-old body, and then after she died. I remember thinking she was inside me because I invited her to be. She was talking to my prayer partners, and I'm co-conscious with them, and I'm thinking she might be 12, but she feels like a college student because I've been around college students my career. That's what I've done for a living, and thought she doesn't talk like she's 12. And eventually, she got around to saying, "No, I really felt that I was about 20." And she said, "On this side, I can be that if I want to. I don't have to be the 12-year-old. I can be the 20-year-old me. And even though I didn't get to live 20 years on the earth, afterwards I can adapt and I can be more of what feels right." And so she opted to be 20.
That begs the question, Father Nathan. So let's say a couple is here on earth, they lose a child in childbirth. Maybe there's a child that's in vitro or in utero, that's maybe only 6 months along, and the child is lost. That soul goes back to the afterlife. Does that soul then decide, well, I'm going to go back to another couple or go back to them? Or does it exist there in the afterlife and then decide, well, you know what? I'll just advance myself here and be who I am and age there.
I'm glad you asked the question in the way that you did because I used an image of a courtroom and giving testimony just a moment ago. And I tried in my books to only say what I've observed and not go beyond the data. My undergraduate training was in social science, sociology, And in the social sciences, you're trained to create studies of some kind where you observe human behavior in groups, and then you quantify it, you chronicle it, and you quantify it, and you that's one of the jobs, is just to gather the data and present it. If you're going to go beyond that, you're supposed to label it.
Okay.
If people want to ask you, after you've done this study, what are your conclusions? You draw a line and say, since you asked, here's what I conclude. And then that can have two parts. The conclusion can be quantified data. Here, this percentage of people did this or that thing and so on. And then there's yet a third place where you can say, do you have an opinion about it? What do you think about it now that you've been through all this study? And then you give your opinion, but you're supposed to label it.
Okay.
Because somebody could opine differently based upon the same data.
Sure.
Well, all of the sessions that we do are verbal. We record them on my iPhone. Well, we use Zoom, just as we're using to do this podcast. Next to my laptop, I have my iPhone open to an app named Rev, R-E-V, which records it. And when I'm finished, well, I hit a button and it transcribes it using AI, and I get a transcript in about 2 minutes. So, and then I get that written transcript and I clean it up for stammers, incomplete sentences, and I label who was speaking. The AI has a hard time figuring out who's talking when the voice is being used by more than one person. So I do a little light edit and then I store them. I have about 600 of them.
Wow.
There are a total of 39 that are in print, 13 in each of three books. And on my podcast, I might have done about 5 or 6 more by now.
Okay.
And then I have a whole big cache of a lot of other ones that after I'm gone, I think while I'm still here, I think it would be a good PhD project. It would be somebody that wanted to spend the time laboring over it. And there's one gentleman that's already doing something on that order a little bit. There's the question of verification. Can I prove that any of these people actually existed? That's another side issue. But what your question about a baby who dies before birth or very young or something, could they come back as somebody else? That would be going beyond my expertise. So I would only be opining, and so I'd rather not.
Okay, that's right, and that's perfectly respectable. I actually respect that quite a bit, that you wouldn't want to comment on that.
I could, but on this podcast, I'd rather stick with the data.
Good, good.
And say I haven't encountered that experience in this work.
Okay, good, good. All right. Now, one of the things you mentioned in the first book is that a lot of times when you get these stuck souls,
mm-hmm.
sometimes they're guardian angel or their guide or whatever, whoever would want to label it, whatever they want to label it, will push them forward to you in your dream and say, here they are, you know, or present them to you to get them unstuck.
Guide them toward you at the very least. I would push would go too far because that presumes lack of freedom. So coercion.
Okay. So you don't believe that they're selected because they're ready?
They are, but with their permission. So I don't know. I was just objecting to the word push because I don't like to be pushed.
Oh, okay. Okay.
If you want me to get into the next room, you can invite me and I might take your invitation, but I don't want you pushing me.
Okay.
And the afterlife that I've experienced, it's all about freedom.
Okay. Okay.
The guardian angels are absolutely real. They're not little pixies or sprites or any other kind of mythical being. They're for real things. And that was one of the things I was taught as a kid, that you're not here alone and your guardian angel is always with you. They love you and they'll be by your side. They're a little bit like a Secret Service agent. They're there to try to do what they can to protect you. But at the same time, they knew, and you should know, that you're mortal and will die of something one day. So death is not to be prevented absolutely because it's a natural part of this incarnation, this life. But they're very helpful in that they've observed everything about you. They can't read your mind because it's rude.
Oh.
You can invite them in. If you have a quandary about something and you wish you had an expert advocate advisor, you can say to your guardian angel, "You've known me from the womb. Here's what I'm struggling with. What do you think?" And then you get still and ask for guidance. Move in my imagination, move in my attractions, move in my sleep. I do that before sleep. I'll say, if you can nudge me in my sleep and help me toward the most possible, the best possible outcome, especially if it's about service, if it's not just selfishness. But anyway, the guardians, when in the work that we're doing, most of the people that we're helping, they're all vetted, they're not random. They've been through a healing process and they've come to a level of truth that they don't really need to be in this medical model thing anymore. It's like being at the discharge staff at the door of a hospital. We help them. We haven't been in the ER. We haven't been doing all the heavy lifting of the work they needed to do. All we are is the guys at the door. And they tell us a little bit about where they started, what they went through, and how they've arrived to this day. And the guardians will say it's a little like graduation. One guy compared it to his graduation from kindergarten. Did you ever have one of those, or be at one of those?
No,
Did you ever? You did you ever
I've been at one, but I didn't have one. I'm too
We
old to
had
have
one.
had
I
one.
wore a tiny cap and gown when I graduated kindergarten, and the guy said, "I haven't done a damn thing. I haven't earned any degree at all, but they're all celebrating me like I'm graduating." He was grateful. But he was saying, "They're making a big fuss that I'm going from here to wherever you people help me go." And he was just funny about it. But the guardians will come on at the front end, like sort of to do a mic test. You and I are communicating over technology today, but we hardly had to spend a second on it.
Right.
All the buttons worked. But not always. Sometimes you can't figure out why the sound isn't working or whatever. Well, sometimes when the angel will come, when we're moving into that prayer, I pray to Saint Michael. Well, I pray to the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, the divine persons in the Catholic understanding of God. Then I pray to Michael the Archangel. And again, I'm not praying toward outer space. I'm praying inside and nearby. Michael, come and stand guard over us. Keep us safe from any that might harm. Mother Mary, please do the same. And then Saint Paul, Saint Dominic, the founder of our order, Mary Magdalene. I have a whole list of friends that I invite to be around. My prayer partners are usually on Zoom and they're in different parts of the country. So one is in California, one's in Buffalo, I'm in Tucson. Zoom works great. But once we've said our protective prayers, I read the dream story, which is usually not more than a paragraph long. And then I'll ask my partners, "Do you need me to read it a second time or do you feel like you've got the data?" I'll either read it a second time or not. Have you ever heard of Lectio Divina? Do you know that phrase? It's a for any of your audience that don't know it, it's a prayer technique where you could take, for example, a passage of scripture that's a paragraph long, and you read it, and you might do this with other people, and you read it in a male voice or a female voice, and then switch. You read it once for the data, for the mind, a second time for the heart, and then the third time, you might read it a third time, and everybody says nothing. You just sit still and you let it soak in. And then somebody who's the leader will say, this time listen for only one word, or listen for a phrase, or listen for a question that comes to your heart because of this passage. So you can do that either alone or with a small group. So we do something like that to let the story sink in and be in my bones and my skin. And then I'll say, "Okay, guardian angel, would you please come first to clarify, because dreams have indistinctness in them by their nature. Why did I see coins on the ground? What were these candlesticks?" And they'll come in and they're funny because they'll introduce themselves first because they're part of the team. Like, "I ask you, please don't call me Father Castle."
Yes, yeah.
We establish a little bit of rapport, and that includes a name. And then they'll usually give me a name, and the name very often has something to do with the story. It's not their real name, it's a nickname. Let me tell you this little story. It's a little bit of an aside, but my best
Sure.
friend is a retired priest. He rented a house for us a few years ago, an Airbnb where we were for about a month. It was in August. He's a Boston Red Sox fan. I'm a Houston Astros fan. He watched I watched the Astros on a laptop. He's watching the Red Sox on an iPad. And it was the Little League World Series, and they were on the wall on a big TV on the wall. I was doing a crossing with my prayer partners, and we were in that space. I said, "Okay, we're ready for a guardian. Guardian, would you please come in?" And I had to tell my partners, "Okay, we got a real winner here. This guy wants to be a comic, this angel." And he says he wants to be known as Jake, but not from State Farm. I said, "Okay, go ahead, Jake, but not from Jake Farm, from State Farm." And he explained to my partners in angel language. He said, "These men, they're grown men. One of them watches adults play baseball on this small machine. This one watches on a different machine in his team, and they both watch children play baseball on a screen that's on the wall. But it doesn't matter whether it's either of the two of them or the children on the wall, their games get interrupted at regular intervals by Jake from State Farm." And then he described Jake from State Farm. Jake from State Farm is, and he used the word misapprehension. When's the last time you used that word in a sentence? That Jake from State Farm is under the misapprehension that everyone he encounters is interested in buying this insurance product that he wants to sell to them. Anyway, he just felt like he needed to call himself Jake, but not from State Farm. And then we were on to the races. We went on to help the person that he was guiding and all that. But the angel part at the front end, sometimes they're persons, and so they can be very serious and task oriented. They can be playful, or anything in between. They're always loving. And then sometimes they can hardly hold back their joy because this is graduation day. The one that they've been helping that went through a traumatic death or some other trauma has healed sufficiently that they're way more free than they ever have been until now. And so there's pride and excitement and joy about accompanying them to a next part of their life that hasn't happened yet. So anyway,
Interesting.
the angels are a very large part of what we do.
Very interesting. As we get close to the end of the program here, Father Nathan, I have this question for you because this has actually happened to me as the host of this show. I've had people come forward to me, and the reason why I say it really is a blessing to have you on today as another avenue to help those who are stuck in the afterlife. I've had people email me, I've had people contact me and say, I've had that dream, and there's a relative of mine that is stuck either in a dark dimension or they're stuck in a place that they have never seen before. And I'm scared. I don't know how to get them out of it. The only thing that I've been able to tell them, and this is honest and from the heart, and they've told me things such as my relative died an atheist, or my relative died not believing. And this is the only thing that I've been able to tell them. And this is honest truth, Father Nathan, is I know this, is if they do have the power to come back to you in another dream, is to tell them that they simply, even though they didn't believe in this life, and this is the reason why I found the story with Dwight so powerful, is that I know that Jesus himself was able to reach down into hell and pull spirits up with him and pull people up with him, is to pray and ask for Jesus to help them out of that dark dimension. That's the only thing that came from my heart to think to tell them. I said, I know it's hard for you to imagine, and it's hard for you to think of that, even if you yourself is atheist or agnostic. But to me, that seems like the only way to save a person in that dark dimension. And that's only from my perspective. I need to know from you what your advice would be to someone who would come to you and ask you that.
Do what your mother said to do. Do the best you can. Isn't that what your mother said?
Do the best and forget the rest.
And forget the rest. As long as you start from your heart and you call out to God, however you understand whatever God is, because I'm a Catholic Christian, I use the person of Jesus and Mother Mary and the Catholic saints and so on. But that's not the only way things can be done. We're 1.4 billion out of 8 billion on the planet right now. And God loves all the other ones, too. So it's not like we've cornered the market on God's attention and God's love. But I also bloom where I'm planted. And this is where I'm planted. So these are the tools that I employ because this is what I know. But in the Catholic tradition, you can have a mass said for people. You can go to your local Catholic church without being a Catholic and say, I understand there's something that you do to somehow assist people who have died. Is it possible for me to take part in that? And that's easily done. But praying from your heart, and don't make yourself responsible for other people's outcomes. Don't feel like it's, oh my God, I got to get them out of hell, or I got to get, you don't have to do anything except your best. And that should be done calmly, not with agitation. Agitation adds nothing helpful. And don't presume that everybody that died in a traumatic way or an addiction or suicide or anything like that, that they're all a big mess. Because they aren't necessarily. There are plenty of people who will die in a tragic way today, who will leave their body accompanied by their guardian angel, who will pull them out of the wreckage, and off they'll go. Not everybody needs this kind of work. It's just that some people do. And for those who do, they're heaven has a place. it works, isn't that in Mr. Mrs. Robinson?
Yeah.
Heaven holds a place for those who pray. Hey, hey, hey.
Yeah.
Just form a prayer from your heart and say, I still love you. And you don't even need to feel tingles or have visual and auditory experiences. You can do whatever you do. I would recommend praying in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, because I think it creates a safe space.
Mm-hmm.
It creates a clear channel, and it's easy to do. There's a lot of non-Catholic football players who make the sign of the cross as they cross spike the ball of the touchdown. They know that that's a Christian thing somehow, and they do it. You can do that, and then just say, I want to speak from my heart to my beloved and say, I haven't forgotten you, and I'm offering you this prayer. Think of it as giving them currency, current, like electrical current. Our word for money follows that idea, that it creates energy. If I give you $20 that you didn't have, you now have $20 more to spend on whatever you want. It creates possibilities.
Okay.
And you can create possibilities for a soul that's died already. You don't need to know how they spend it. You can just say, here's a prayer. And I want this to be for your good and for your advancement. And I want you to live in the light and the truth. And you don't need to do anything else. You don't need to worry about it. You can do that. And maybe you do that with a cup of tea in the morning, or while you're gardening, or doing any, going for a walk. It doesn't have to be some pious exercise where you necessarily need to go to church. If that works, great. But you can also do that anywhere that that your heart finds peace, and get rid, leave the cell phone behind.
Yeah.
Tune out from all the other interruptions for a few minutes anyway, and just speak from your heart for the person who's died and say, I only want the best for you. And if there's anybody with whom you ended on bad terms, you can do one good apology and then leave it alone. Nobody wants to be apologized to 20 times. If you apologize to me once and you mean it, that's good. We're good. I'll forgive you and we're done. Sometimes people will get all in a fret because they said or did the wrong thing and whatnot. Don't worry about that. Just offer your peace and say, I look forward to being with you. And the next time we'll go out for a beer. Oh, we'll have some fun.
One last one before we leave people today, and this is the other question I have for you as well. You mentioned the apology thing, which is an excellent point that you just brought up. Here's the other thing I wanted to ask you about as well. When we long for people in the afterlife, do we create that attachment as well? Do we keep them stuck by keeping a longing for them? Should we let that go as well?
That's a balancing act, because especially I deal with people that died in a sudden tragic way. And so very often the survivors end up having a hard time saying goodbye because they didn't know that this was even coming. And they feel an incompletion because I never got to say what I didn't say. Part of grieving is wishing things weren't as they are. Part of grieving is wishing we could turn the clock back to the day before. And so there's a reasonable amount of that that I think can be tolerated. You know, like your show again is about darkness, but it's also light.
Yeah.
And darkness doesn't need to be obliterated. It was created for a reason, but it does give way to light. And the darkness of the death of a loved one and the grieving of them, don't feel like you have to chase it away. Let it be. Let there be some darkness. But I've just been through a death. It was only my dog, but not only my dog. He was my beloved. Yeah. And he died in my arms. And I didn't know he was going to die that day. He was not sick. And so I've been through some grieving of late. And what I say to myself is, okay, Nathan, you can feel bad about Toto for the next 20 minutes, and then I'll set a timer. And then I'll say, well, I just can't find the energy to do a podcast or to write anything. I think I'll sweep the floor. You know, it bothers me to let time go by unproductively. That's just built into me. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean I can't fold laundry. Or yeah. While I'm grieving, I'm going to grieve and feel sad while I fold the laundry. And then when the buzzer, I use the timer on my iPhone, and I'll say, sadness time is over. Now we're going to put that away. I don't know if everybody, that's just my own quirky personality. I don't know if that worked for anybody else, but you could give it a try. But just don't let yourself be sad all the time. You don't honor the memory of your loved one by letting your life be ruined by their leaving you. It was always something that could have happened, and it did. And it's not good to fight it, scream at God. I don't know. I don't want to do that. I just want to say, okay, thanks for the memories. And now help me turn it around. Help me to turn Good Friday into Easter morning. Help me to trust that the sun will come out tomorrow, and I'll sing to myself, you know, I'll whistle, or, you know, I'll buy myself flowers, or I'll do little tricks to try to make sure that even though I might be going through a difficult time, I'm not going to let it consume me, because I've got work to do and other people to love besides the one that just left me.
Right. Right. You're absolutely right about that. The books are out there right now. We have a link in the description of this program, the Afterlife Interrupted books, all three of them. Also, the podcast is wonderful as well, the Joyful Friar podcast, and we have a link to that as well. Father Nathan, I want to thank you so much for being with us today. It's been quite enlightening, and it's been my pleasure to have you on today.
Good. Well, it's been a joy. And after we finish the sign off, I'll have something else to say to you.
All right. Sounds good. I want to leave people with just a couple of notes here. Folks, the new iPhone, of course, is coming out, and some other Apple products as well. And with that, the Darkness Radio Apple app will be updated. So keep that in mind. There may be a little bump around in the road. So if there is, stay with it. There will be an update that will be coming to your devices. Make sure that you look out for it and update it as it comes up on your devices. So make sure you look for that Apple update for the Darkness Radio app. Second, Halloween is coming. October 31st, you have two trips that are available from Mysterious Adventures Tours. And Maria Dacre Stoker is taking you to Romania for 12 days. And you get to party at Bran Castle, Dracula's Castle. As part of that, of course, Dacre Stoker, the great-grandnephew of Bram Stoker. That's the first trip. The second trip is with Brian J. Cano to the Pooka Festival in Ireland, where Halloween started. Both trips are available on a payment plan. So by all means, go to darknessradioshow.com, click on the link in the events page, and you can take advantage of either of those trips from Mysterious Adventures Tours. Third, We're coming up on the weekend. And of course, with that, you've got plenty of great things going on. You've got church festivals, you've got football games, you've got Renaissance festivals. Just want to remind you this weekend to go out and grab someone who is elderly in your family, go out and grab a neighbor who may be disabled, go out and grab somebody who needs to get out of the house and enjoy those festivals along with you. Go be a light in someone's darkness this weekend. Take someone with you who needs to get out of the house and be a part of life with you. That's a message from your friends here at Darkness Radio. For Mally Fox, for Jessica Freeberg, for Beer City Bruiser, and for Travis Thorpe, I'm Tim Dennis. Thank you so much for listening to and watching the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio.
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at MinkyCouture.com. This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at MinkyCouture.com. This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at MinkyCouture.com. This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at MinkyCouture.com. This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at MinkyCouture.com.